This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivisuthi. Last month, we saw many school children very upset. We saw some of these pictures in the newspapers. They were devastated over their less than perfect string of A's for UPSR. And with PT3 results due to be out next week, we'll be seeing probably similar reactions from our children as well. Is this education system putting too much emphasis on academic success? I think a lot of us know the answer to that. But as parents, I know it is very, very difficult to let go. It's easier said than done. So we have in the studio with us Counselor Dr. Anasuya Jagadeesan. Welcome to the show, Doctor. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
Okay. Counselor, yes. Are you a counselor, right?
Yes, I'm a counselor.
Can you explain to us? A lot of us misunderstand. We have psychologists, we have counselors, we have psychiatrists, we have many other people in the mental health line. What do you do as a counselor?
A counselor is somebody who deals with normal people in abnormal situations.
That's an interesting one.
Yes. Because situations are stressful, they're out of control. So we help people unpack those type of situations so that they can deal with the situation better. We are not looking at people who are mentally damaged. We are looking at people who are overwhelmed by what is going on in their life that sometimes is not in their control.
Could you give me an example?
Well, like the results that you were talking about, that's not in their control at
all.
That's
why schools have counselors. Yes. How effective that is, I really don't know. As a counselor, you need to be independent. You cannot be judgmental. Yes. That kind of thing. Anasuya, how do you approach your work when it comes to students?
When it comes to students, I take the student as the student. The client is the student, especially teenagers. The parents are not my clients. The student is my client. And so you take them where they are and see where they want to go and not where other people expect them to go. Usually that's where the problem comes in. It's expectations versus the student's actual ability or what the student sees where they want to go, which may not be the norm.
A lot of us here are guilty of overparenting. It's very, very difficult to let go.
I've got
two kids of my own. It is very difficult. It took me a long time to let go and not get caught up in the rat race as such. And the only way you can do that is to you really pull yourself away from them and let them go. You know, hanging out in the school, talking to parents doesn't help. All that sort of thing.
Can I just... You don't let your kids go. You let them grow. You have to be their parent. And you notice nowadays a lot of people saying, I want to be my kid's friend. Children have two parents, most kid children. Some children may have more depending on the situation, but children mainly have two parents. They have thousands of friends. You are their parent. You're not their best friend. And when parents give up that role because they want to be their friend, that's when certain things tend to go wrong. You are their parent. So you don't let them go, you let them grow.
Okay.
It's like, slight difference because...
Giving them the space.
Yes, the space is needed. But they're your kids. Yeah. My dad's not letting me go till now, and I'm in my 40s. So, yeah.
He will always be your dad.
Yes, exactly.
Always.
And, that's the love.
So, that's the role of a counselor.
Yes.
And what we're experiencing now is this overachievement thing where for years and years and years we know what to expect. Our children come out with a string of A's and we're very comfortable with that. And what happened this year is something happened. We changed the marking scheme. We changed the structure of this examination.
Right.
And a lot of children as a result didn't do very well. How did you feel at that time?
Okay, there are two issues here. One is the students who got A's. Now, firstly, that statement of all those children got a lot of A's. Now, I have a doctor right now, but I was not one of the students who got a lot of A's.
Yeah.
I'm not an A student all the way. I worked hard when I got into university and got where I am, but I wasn't an A student. And if you see the results, there are students who are average students who suddenly got F's. They've never got that bad results before.
In this exam. Mm-hmm.
And, usually your trial results will be better than the UPSR or the government exams. But this is a case where in their trials, they got Bs and they got Cs. However, in the exam, they got Ds and Fs. Can you imagine a 12-year-old looking at that paper and seeing an F for the first time in their life? That's a different ball game from an A getting a B. An F, you failed. You can use as much logic as you can. But when you see that result, for the students who are average, who suddenly got really bad results, that's devastating into who they are as people. A fail is something different from a D. So I think that this part of the conversation is not being addressed, because we do have the string of A students, but then we've got the students who study really hard but don't score A's. They score B's and C's. But now they seem to don't have a voice in this situation. Mm-hmm. And I find it rather scary, because they are actually the majority group. You know, the A's are a minority group in the end of the day.
Where is the gap in this?
The gap in this would be, who's talking about them? Everybody's focusing on the A students who didn't get their string of A's, you know, and nobody's talking about what happens to the students who are good and who now failed and then have to readjust their self-esteem to say, you know, it's not that I didn't do well, I failed. And can you imagine the conversations back home? I failed the subject. What? You failed? You know, usually you get B, what? Usually you get C. How can you fail? That word, the word fail, you know, in our society, not only our society, let's just go anywhere in society, the word fail is such a taboo. And, you know, our kids failed.
What's a good way of coping with that?
Our good way of coping with that is first to at least address it and have people addressing, you know, failing one subject for a kid in school is a huge thing. To have parents look at it and actually talk to the children about it and say, okay, you know, yes, you failed this subject by the school, but let's see what you've done all these years, and maybe use the past results and make that more important in their minds. And one of the things that we really cannot do is compare. The comparison between, you know, your cousin got how much, your this got, oh my, please. Do not compare kids, because it's one of the worst things you can do, especially in this scenario where this year's batch, regardless of whether they got A's, B's, C's or whatever, has got a very unique circumstance that the previous year's batch, you cannot compare with them. So you cannot compare with the older brother, you cannot compare with the older cousin. Please, you know, this is the one thing I beg y'all not to do. This was a special case.
Our phone lines are open. We're discussing exam results. The UPSR exams came out some time ago, and the PT3 results are due coming up soon, next week, actually. Well, it wasn't easy coping with the UPSR results.
Yeah.
And we have Dr. Anasuya Jagadeesan in the studio with us. She's a counsellor. If you have a question, you can text 016-201-9000. We're on WhatsApp as well. Or you can give us a call. The number is 03-7710-9000. Just to move on, the effects of an outcome like this, what would it be on the child? If it's not managed well enough, what could be long-term effects of an outcome of results like the UPS results?
Okay, let me give an example. I think that would best highlight this. I'm dealing mainly with teaching people to be counselors, master's students. And I actually have students who are masters. They've been through university. And you ask them, so how did you do in school? And their response is, I wasn't straight A's. For the response to say, I wasn't straight A student, when I asked you how you did, I didn't ask you how you didn't do. It shows how much weight is placed on getting all those A's. And on one exam, not on their body of work. So because we're focusing on one exam and not their body of work and what they've done and what they've achieved, you know, in totality, not in a, you know, in a holistic manner, that's where things are going a little bit screwed towards the side of, you know, these alphabets that they get.
Yeah, and the government is trying to move away from that.
Yes.
Hence the, you know, UPSR results.
Yes.
The way it was. So how do we then start changing our mindsets that the A's is not everything? And because I know that to a lot of us Asian parents, even if there are no exams, we get nervous because we don't know where our children stand. We don't understand if they're progressing. So what are your thoughts on that to help parents understand better?
better?
I think one thing parents need to start understanding is what actually is intelligence. Intelligence is not just book studying of memorizing and throwing up facts. It's the ability to apply, the ability to do different things, musical ability, sports ability. All these things are different levels of intelligence. If you can look at a child and say, okay, the child is strong in this manner and this manner, they may not be as strong in other manners, then we can actually tell the child, you know, you have these strengths and another kid has these strengths. You're both strong in different ways. You're both good in different ways. And yes, there are areas where we are not perfect, but look, I'm not perfect either. Sometimes it's good to share stories of when we didn't do so well with our children, because they are never going to always be the top. There are going to be times when they have difficulties and when they have failure. And to build resilience, to have those experiences where you did badly and then you work and you do better, is actually, you know, more nurturing for the idea of somebody to grow into an adult. Then you protect someone and protect someone and protect someone. And then as they're an adult, you go, oh my God, why are you so immature? Well, maybe it's because you protected them so much.
It's our way of overparenting. Yes. I'll give you an example, Dr. Anasuya. Before the UPSR exams this year, somebody wrote to me and said, you know, asked me if I would come and speak to parents in a private school on helping them how to cope with the upcoming exams.
Okay.
Parents were terribly stressed. My reply was, I am not in a position to come and speak to the parents because I'm not an expert.
Okay.
Did I have to be an expert, or if I could go and help, what would I actually say to these people?
Well, you have two children of your own.
Yes.
And you've raised them well, so you are an expert mother. And you can share your experience. You can talk about how you know, what you went through in raising your child and the different problems that you faced. And it may ring with some of them. And some people, may feel for that and may, you know, it may help them. It depends on the situation. I'm not sure that answered your question, but if you're asking me what would I say to a group of parents about how to manage their children's results, is that the question?
Correct.
Then a direct answer to that question would be, your kids are not the results. Your children are your children. And as much as we want the best for them, wanting the best for them when it is not them can be scarring. Look at your child as a whole. And then keeping in mind, our main goal as our parent is to let them grow. So sometimes they fall, sometimes they stumble. And the child needs to know that I may fall and I may stumble, but when I come to you, I have a safe place.
It is this mindset that, you know, when we were growing up, and I'm sure you experienced the same thing, that academically you have to do well to survive, right?
Yes.
And to some of us, it's very hard to let go of that.
Yes.
Because sometimes an education is the root out of poverty. The education is the route towards a better life, right? And that's what we believe in, and hence the pressure on our children. How do we balance that?
What is education and what are A's? What do you actually need to get into certain universities? What I'd suggest parents do is have a discussion with the child and say, what do you want to be? Who do you want to be? Okay, let's take the university entry requirements and see whether you can meet these requirements. Okay, based on these requirements, what are your standards that you need to set in order to meet that goal? Because if you want to be a doctor, you have to get all A's. But if your goal is to be a businessman, or your goal is to be an accountant, then there's a different standard which would get you into the university. So one suggestion would be is to match properly what the child actually wants, especially a teenager, what the teen actually wants in terms of their life goal with what they are studying, and see whether there's a correct match. Because sometimes they're getting all A's in subjects that mean nothing to them and have no bearing on their future goal. So they've got no motivation to study, no motivation to do anything about it, no will to study. And then the parents take on the whole thing. And then you see parents more worried about exam than their kids. And the kids are fine.
Identifying their strengths is also very important.
Yes.
Because then that will surface. If you let them grow,
yes,
it will somehow surface. And then you can push them in the right direction.
Or maybe guide them, yeah, rather than push them.
Okay.
Because when you push, they push back.
That's
and some of them are stronger than you.
Okay. Yes, kids. I always teens found they were manipulative. We're discussing overachievement. We're discussing being mentally resilient when it comes to examinations. How do we nurture our children? How do we grow our children in the right direction without too much emphasis on academic results? I think mental health problems have doubled in, yes, Malaysia over the 5-year period of 2011 and 2016.
Yes.
That is a huge a red flag, if you ask me. So if you have a question, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 016-201-9000. Good afternoon, it's Health and Living, and I'm Meera Sivasodhi. In the studio with me, Dr. Anasuya Jagadeesan. She's a counsellor. We're discussing mental health in children, especially in view of results, our whole idea of rote learning in relation to our education system, and us as parents trying our level best to create, come about, you know, with that balance of allowing them to grow as well as excel academically. What are some of the signs that we can look out for, Dr. Anasuya, when it comes to our children not being able to cope academically?
Change of behavior.
And what are we looking out for?
We're looking at behavior where they were, you know, if they were very gregarious, suddenly they're very quiet. And sometimes we see that as a good thing. Children don't change behavior unless something is going on. So it could be the other way around. They're very quiet and suddenly they're very clingy. And these could be behaviors that you yourself would want them to have, so you think that it's, oh, they're going in the right direction. But when there's a change of behavior in children, that is always the first sign that maybe you need to have a longer conversation with the child of what is going on in their lives.
And that's what I find. A lot of parents don't even know where to start having that conversation,
yeah,
because you're very emotionally invested,
right,
in this child. How do you pull yourself away from those, you know, being so emotionally involved to start thinking practically?
The first thing I would ask is, what do you talk to your child about? Not what you ask the child about, but what do you tell the child about? What do you talk to the child about? If you don't know what comics the child reads, if you don't know what movies the child watches or games the child watches, and let them talk to you about it and tell you about this really, to us, really long-winded story about some, you know, weird butterfly they saw, how do you expect them to talk about something that's more important later? How do you expect them to talk about something that hurts them or where they may be shy or where they may have emotions that, you know, are not so nice if you don't talk to them about things that initially, to you at least, don't matter? Starting the conversation is the parent's responsibility. And when we have a conversation with our children, they must feel safe to talk about anything. That's the starting point. So how do you do that? You tell them about your day. You tell them about what you found interesting, but usually we don't, we just ask them questions. We don't actually have that conversation where, I mean, you have teenagers, you ask them, what does your dad do in the work? What does your dad do at office? I don't know, he goes to work. Okay, he says he's an executive. Okay, what does that mean? I don't know. So if you expect to know what your child is doing in school, you have to teach them how to talk to you, and you model the behavior that you want. So if you want the child to talk to you about what happens in school, you start with talking to them about what happened at work. And it may not be a long story, but something funny or something simple, and carry on from there.
Because to the standard question of how was school, it's always, it was all right.
Yeah.
It was okay.
But that's how you answer them when they ask you how's work.
So you need to start.
We need to model.
Chatting.
Yes.
And these chats need to start happening when they're very young.
No, you can have this. You can start the process at any time. That is a slight misconception that if I don't do it, I lose the opportunity. No. Teenagers and children can be very forgiving if they know you love them. And if they will acknowledge you made some mistakes earlier, but you're trying now. They may punish you a little bit because you made those mistakes, but they will forgive you after a time because, you know, kids can be wonderful. Yep. That's why you have them.
Well, it's about building trust all over again, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
What how does mental health, how do health, mental health issues manifest in children? I was reading about panic attacks. I mean, is that the first sign or the first manifestation of a child that's overstressed?
No, that's not the first. The first signs would be, you know, more sensitive. They are more picky. They are, you know, they're not doing the things that they enjoy anymore. A bit more reserved, a bit more nervous. Those would be the first signs. But those are, you know, those are harder to see as a sign and not as normal behavior, which is situational. So sometimes you can just have a conversation about that, and then it may never turn into a panic attack. But when these things are ignored and it continues and continues and continues until suddenly it's a panic attack and they go, it came from nowhere. No, it didn't come from nowhere. There were signs. We just didn't notice. You know, and usually children do try to tell. And sometimes, unfortunately, parents do dismiss because they think, oh, this kid likes to complain all the time, when actually they don't.
What happens during a panic attack?
What happens during a panic attack is that the ability to think coherently is lost. So you think it's, they have gone into the state of thinking in the extremes, in the highest extremes. I have failed. I'm not good. I can't do this. I can't do that. Life is terrible. Everybody hates me. Mommy hates me. Daddy hates me. I've got no friends. All of this may not be true, but because they're in this very extreme state, you know, everything becomes pushed to the end, and you know, it's better if I'm not around. Of course, those are the most extreme and the most dangerous of it. And yeah, that's when you get, you know, full-blown anxiety and panic attack. I can't handle this. I'm scared. You know, nobody's helping me. Those kinds of thoughts.
Based on the children you've actually dealt with, is it parental pressure or is it pressure coming from the school? Is it peer pressure?
I honestly would say it is life pressure, because I see clients one by one. And when you're dealing with children one by one, you realize that each one of them has a slightly different background, slightly different friends, slightly different teachers. All of these have different meaning in the child's life. It would be quite inappropriate, I think, for me to say that there's one issue which causes more problems than everything else. Actually, there isn't. Everything, or different things according to the ability and the resilience of the child. And, you know, of course, the environment that the child is in. So I suppose the best answer would be the environment that the child is in is what is creating that situation. So we do need to look at the environment.
So if you have a question, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or you can text 016-201-9000. We're discussing helping children be less stressed when it comes to exams and how do we cope with results when it actually comes out. I mean, a lot of us do feel disappointed at some stage when it comes to children, and because our expectations are high.
Yeah, but what's wrong with being a little bit disappointed once in a while? It's okay. It's not the end of the world.
It isn't. It's better. You know, my husband always says, let them fall now rather than later on in life. Emotional development versus intellectual development.
Right.
Which do you think ideally should be we should focus on more of?
Ideally, emotional. Because you can have a highly intelligent young person who then commits suicide. And we've seen numerous cases of that. We have highly intelligent young people. They were so good when they were young. And suddenly they have a breakdown. And they end up on medications which are really strong. And they are not able to cope with anything except the most simple of tasks. So yes, I do honestly believe that emotional management, the ability to manage their emotions so that they understand that bad things do happen. It's not always good. I don't always have to be happy. There are times when I can have problems, and it's okay for me to have problems. It's okay for me to be sad. I don't need medication for this. It's part of a process. And I can, you know, I can come out of this sadness. I think that is more important, because at the end of the day, that's what keeps people mentally healthy, the ability to manage their emotions.
Is that where we're failing?
I wouldn't say failing, but that's the challenge of the generation, I think, because, you know, nobody talks about it. Very few people talk about how do we manage our emotions. How do you teach kids to manage emotions? Mm-hmm. We just say, you know, either you deal with it or you're supposed to be happy all the time. There's this idea that everything is positive. You know, we are supposed to have rah, rah, rah. No, Yes, there are points where we have rah, 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 but there are points where we go down. That doesn't mean we have depression. We are just going through something that's tough. Now, we go through that, and then we can be happy again, but there's nothing wrong with being sad.
Sometimes it's also us feeling like we are, you know, we need to, sometimes we don't want to know.
Yes.
As parents, you go into sometimes a state of denial that you don't want to know that your child could possibly be going through some kind of an emotional turmoil, and you don't know where to start. And if that's the case, what do we do?
I think parents are a bit afraid because they think that if, and here again that F word is going to come up, which they think they failed their kid if the child is going through something bad. Sometimes it's not that they failed, it's just that that's a life process where I need to teach the child how to get up, brush themselves off and move on or move forward with what they learn. So when parents find that they don't want to see, then they won't see until the child crashes. And that, then, you know, that's when we come in. But we can come in earlier before it's an issue. You know, mental health workers, counselors, support, you know, support family, extended family, uncles, aunties, all can come in before if a parent is feeling overwhelmed. But the parent needs to be aware of that. Unfortunately, that's the one thing where I have to say parents need to be. You can't afford to check out. That's where I said you can't let go. You have to let them grow. Because if you let go, then you can say, oh, but I'm letting them go, you know, I'm letting them be so that they... No. You have to pay attention and you have to be aware that something is wrong. You have to be aware of their normal behavior so you can notice when the behavior becomes abnormal. That would be... You know.
Sure. As you said earlier that, you know, sometimes we are focusing on the children who have succeeded and we're neglecting those who are not succeeding.
I would actually say the normals.
The normals, okay. But how do we manage success as well? I think that's also an important thing. Because you can be successful today, you can, you know, not be successful tomorrow. So how do we manage successful that we don't get carried away with it?
It's the word would be development. How have you developed over this period? What have you learned from failing? You see, when we go back to our, you know, Asian or cultural texts, they have lots of stories where people failed and then they grow from that failure. To a certain extent, it's to make that the story, that a part of this story where you can do this, you can fail, you can go down, it's all right. You can feel bad about it. Now, how do we slowly then, you know, as the hero, go through these difficult periods and come out of it together as a family and make the family stronger. So if, you know, if we look at how, you know, to be really honest, if we look at how our cultures are not about always being happy and always being successful. Our cultures are about growing and developing from challenging situations. And this is a challenge. And maybe that's one of the things that it can, you know, that is a discussion that you can have with the family and say, look, this is a challenge. This is a very bad time for the family. So how do we pull together and how do we come out of this? What would you like, what would the child like to see the parents do? What would the parent like to see the child do? And how we can, as a family, be stronger in this tough period? Because the periods are tough.
Do you think if we redefine learning, that would help?
Yes, Finland is actually doing a very good job at redefining learning and looking at learning as a holistic situational thing where it's how I go through a situation. Now, there are many different solutions I can use to understand a situation. Instead of looking at studies as one subject, one subject, one subject, I look at it in a holistic manner of overcoming problems. Now, our schools probably are not going to do that so fast, but in our families we can. We can look at these things as a situation or problem that our family is facing and have a discussion about what various things we can do to overcome what's happening in our family.
We're going to go into a quick market update, but I want to find out a little bit more about the Finnish education system, which seems to be pretty interesting. It's a small population, formal education, only starts at 7. They don't have homework or tests until they go into their teenage years. So that's what we're talking about, redefining how we learn. We'll come back and find out more up next. Meanwhile, we have Joanne on the line. Joanne, we'll take your call as soon as we come back. If you have a question for Dr. Anasuya Jagatheesan, she's a counsellor. The number to call us is 0377 109 000. Tweet BFM Radio or text 0162 019 000. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Health and Living and I'm Meera Sivasodhi. We have in the studio with us counsellor and counsellor educator Dr. Anasuya Jagatheesan. We're discussing when colours don't fly, meaning when our children don't really achieve those academic results as we wish them to do, to achieve. I think the UPSR results, which came out, I think about a month in September, I understand, didn't go down very well with many children, and we're trying to understand from a counsellor's point of view how we can do better as parents when it comes to coping with these sort of situations. So we have Joanne on the line. Joanne, you have a question?
Yes, hi. I have a sibling who recently went through the UPSR, and it's so hard to see because I see the stress that they go through. I see the stress that my brother has to go through for the preparations for UPSR, and right. I don't know how to reach out to my parents for help because, you know, I don't know if I should be the bridge to reach out to them. Like, what should I do?
Okay. Thank you very much, Joanne. Interesting question. She wants to know, she knows the brother is under a lot of stress, and she wants to be that bridge between the parents and the brother, but she does not know how to do that.
Yeah. Children parenting parents is always going to be very difficult because, you know, parents especially, you know, don't really like it when kids are right in terms of sometimes telling them what you're doing is harmful, and they don't want to be that. They don't want to hear it. It's a hard conversation to have. Now, the fact that you are aware of this as a sibling and you want to help them, that's very good awareness on your part, you know. How do we do it? We do it slowly. You have to understand that your parents don't have to agree with you. And if you get frustrated and you lose your temper, the conversation is going to be over. So I understand you're frustrated. Get that frustration out before you start that conversation with your parents. Go into your parents understanding, I'm going to talk to them, I'm going to present my case, and I'm going to hope for the best. Present your case and then don't lose your temper. Because the minute you lose your temper talking to your parents, you've kind of lost the argument.
And chances are you probably are going to because you're so emotionally involved. Yeah. Yes.
So try to practice that conversation with somebody else. So, and there, when you're practicing it with somebody else, get all those emotions out. So then when you're talking to your parents, don't lose your temper. Just keep it calm, keep it steady, give them something to think about, and then say, look, Mom, Dad, just think about it. Look what is happening and think about it. If you can point out specific examples of how the brother's behavior has been affected, point out those examples that he's more stressed by this and this. So at least you have created that awareness and put markers in their head for them to look and see that the behavior is actually going wrong. It is important to have specific examples of behavior change because, like you mentioned earlier, some parents don't want to see that.
Yeah.
But once you've put that idea in their head that this is a behavior that is wrong and this is a behavior that is wrong and something that means, you know, the person is not right, then very few parents are going to ignore that totally. They are going to be looking out for those behaviors.
And siblings would know.
Yes. Siblings would
immediately
know. Yes.
Even compared to the parents.
Yes.
But, to a large extent.
And the major thing that siblings do is when they come in and they try to protect and then they get accusatory against the parents, mm-hmm. and then the parents defend themselves, and that's when the whole conversation falls apart. Your idea, you don't want to start a fight with your parents. You want to educate your parents, and there's no educator when they're shouting at someone who is effective. So when, unfortunately, it's an emotional situation, but you have to come into this mindset of, I'm going to educate my parents, and then it might work. I won't say it will work, mm-hmm. it might.
Okay. If you have a question, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-1000. You can tweet BFM Radio or you can just text 016-201-9000. Is there a perfect education system? Because I feel everybody learns in a very different way. Everyone's going on about the Finnish education system where you start formal education at 7. There's no homework or testing involved till you're a teenager. You know, and I don't know. I mean, for some children, I think they would thrive in that system. For some, I think they just won't. What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts is that any system that we create, this, we put kids through it. It's not that kids choose the system. The system is there for the kids. You know?
And we can't cater to everybody.
We can't cater to everybody. So there's no way of being, for me to make a blanket statement and say this education system, you know, it has got its flaws because some kids won't like it. I can't do that. But in terms of mental health and overall wellness, if you look at the Finnish system, their levels of child reading and child ability is very high. They don't have dropout rates. You know, they almost have no dropout rates among their children. And that says something about the system where the children feel included and the children feel that education is a good part of their lives and they want to be part of it even going into their teens. So there are some strengths there that we need to look at, and maybe, you know, hopefully as we develop into you know, a more developed nation, this is something we take seriously. It's not easy, but it is something that we need to look at.
When I read this natural inclination towards being academically inclined, do you think that's even a fair statement to say that not everyone is cut out to naturally excel academically?
Not everybody is cut out to memorize and repeat back what they learn. That would be my statement back. Because what is the meaning of the word that you use? Is it based on somebody who is going to school, memorizing and writing it down by rote in exams? Where if I did that in university, in my assignments, you'd be plagiarizing. You wrote exactly what was in the text, and that's plagiarism. And you can't do that. So suddenly the ballpark changes. It's not just the game. The whole ballpark changes. When you're in school and you're supposed to memorize and repeat facts versus when you're in university and you have an assignment and just copying what's in the textbook won't get you any marks. It might get you in lots of trouble with plagiarism.
Of course, later on in life, of course.
So, you know, so what is the best education system? The best education system is any system that allows the child to grow, feel included, feel that they themselves are progressing in life and that they are learning something important. I've always said, even now, I never understood why I learned DYDX. Never used it.
I remember those days.
You know, it's
yes,
like,
of course.
You know, I would have been much, much better if I had learned how to do my taxes.
DY over DX. I almost forgot I learned that in school.
And I think that's where some of the systems are looking at more practical skills, like going to shops and how to actually get a good bargain, how to do your taxes. Why don't we teach that in schools? I mean, when are we supposed to learn that? The first time we do our taxes, that's actually
how to live within our means.
Credit card. Oh boy, I think I need classes.
Absolutely, you know. And they taught us dy over dx.
Yeah, I can't remember what that was about. I just remember dy dx.
You know, and I was just thinking, when do parents know what is a red flag where we can keep ourselves in check that we are overstressing our children? Is it when we become our expectations are based on overachievement or because we expect perfectionism? Are those signs that or red flags that we should be aware of?
I can give you a few red flags. The first red flag would be when your statement when you have a statement to your child that includes, you did well, but this person did better. When you give a child a compliment and you use the word but, it negates the compliment. If you are going to tell a child, you are very pretty, but you should lose a bit of weight, all they hear is, you should lose a bit of weight. That's not a compliment. All right? So the first red flag is if you're using a lot of buts when you talk to your child, or when you're trying to encourage your child, that's something which is a big red flag. No comparison. A second situation is when a child does a non-graded exam. So they're doing something, or the non-graded assessment. So there's no grades there. And you feel the need to check it and then correct them.
But how will they learn from their mistakes?
It's non-graded. It was supposed to be there's no pass-fail. But still, some parents need to check everything. And if you need to check everything the child does and correct everything the child does, it's basically creating anxiety, because even non-graded things become something that, oh my God, mommy's going to check. No, the teachers are not going to grade, but mommy's going to grade. If you feel that one mark less this year compared to last year is a big failure on the child's part, that's another red flag. If you are, if you are not willing to learn with the child, but, your whole conversations that you have with the child come when results come out. And it's all, that's when the main time you talk to your child, just after exams and after results come out. If that's the main conversations you've had with your child throughout the year, please, something has to change, and it's not the child, it's the parents' communication style with the child.
And sometimes as parents, we know that something's going on in another child's life through our children.
Yes.
How do I approach the parent? How do I, it's a tough one. And I have been privy to some information which I just chose to stay out of it because I felt it wasn't my business. Children afraid to go home because they didn't do well in exams. Children who are afraid parents are going to hit them because they haven't achieved a certain grade. To me, it goes totally against what I believe in.
Yeah.
But it has been very difficult knowing, given this information, and not knowing how to approach it.
Okay, that's a very difficult question, because you're asking about abuse. Now, if you know that a child is being
bordering
abused,
on abuse, yeah. The hitting, of course.
Yeah. So let me just remove the... Okay, so say it's not abuse. Say it's just that it's a hard situation and the child is afraid of going home. My first question would be, are you in a conversation with that parent?
I'm not.
You've never had a conversation with a parent before?
Never.
Then maybe you want to have a conversation with somebody who is close to that parent and warn that person and not the parent themselves, because...
Teacher in the school, perhaps?
A teacher in the school, perhaps, would be a good one that says, okay, to talk to the parents on their behalf. Because when strangers come in, people get defensive. Who are you? Why do you have to say this? If you're a friend, my question would be, when we give people feedback, the best kind of feedback to give people, especially when we have got areas of development as well as when we want to tell people about an area of development, I use the sandwich method. Say something positive. Say the area that they need to develop, and then say something then say something positive again. So you sandwich the negative feedback between two positives. So if I cannot say something nice about you at all, I shouldn't be saying anything. But if I can have a good view of you and say more nice things than less, then by all means, if it's for the development of the child, then actually address it. So I would actually say, this is your child's strength. Now, this is the area of development. Your child has another strength, which is also this. But the area of development has to be there. So if I'm talking to a parent, I'd say, your kid loves you a lot. And obviously from, how they come home on normal days, they're really comfortable. But that said, I do notice that they seem to have some anxiety over exams. Is there something about exams that, upsets them? So then you have a conversation about that. And the end of it, your child is so polite. And it's such a delight talking to the child. So then at least it balances off what you're saying. People are going to hear the negative more than the positive. But if you can't say anything positive at all, then you're being critical. So if I'm actually going to be, I'm going to actually look at the situation and give feedback, then I need to be able to balance what feedback I'm giving. If not, I'm just criticizing. I'm not the kind of person who believes that you don't say anything negative at all, because then you're just being nice. And it's not useful sometimes. Mm-hmm. People need to know the real situation. But if you're going to tell them the real situation, balance it with positives as well, so that people know that you're not just criticizing.
And then hence the miscommunication after that. We're running out of time. Would you have a message to parents or children on... overachieving or taking academics too seriously? It's all about emotional development versus intellectual development.
My main message would be is to allow yourselves to grow. there are areas which may not be academic, which you're good at. Recognize those areas. As families, you know, have strengths and do that. Do the growing in the family of looking at challenges and how do we overcome challenges together. Overcome challenges as a family.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Anasuya Jagadeesan, a counsellor and counsellor educator on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.